Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue.
You're listening to Word of Mouth with Lady Sue on heritageradionetwork.org. You can also download and listen to the show through iTunes or Stitcher. I'm your host, Lady. When not on the air, my job is to eat and drink and connect people. So I'm out and abouting, having the very convos that you hear here, and working with my clients, which include chefs, sommeliers, big brands, startups, those doing what's most innovative and delicious. First off, at the Santa Monica Wednesday Farmers Market, we are out all the way out in California. We catch up with chef owner Walter Mansky of Republique, the very beloved Republique, about mandarquats and the restaurant empire he and wife Margarita Mansky also run in the Philippines. Then in a few minutes, we have here live in the studio, we'll welcome Amanda Cohen, chef owner of the newly reopened Dirt Candy. She's the veggie whisperer, but when she speaks, she does not whisper. Not just chef, she discusses issues in the restaurant world in her dispatches from Dirt Candy column on Eater. And we will get to know the person behind the personality, talk veggies, women, travel, family. Stay to the end, because to wind it down, we'll also get to talk wine with Amanda here in the studio. She's also the wine buyer for her own restaurant. She does it all. Let's go to the Santa Monica Farmers Market. I'm at the Santa Monica Farmers Market in Los Angeles with Walter Mansky of Republique, chef owner. Hi, Walter.
How are you?
Very good.
Great to be here.
It's been such a fun morning. So I got stuck in traffic. I'm comparing LA to New York because I just got to do that. Stuck in traffic for like a long time, but then the produce here is bonkers.
Yeah, we're very, very lucky in Southern California, even though we have bad traffic.
So you are a regular at all of these markets. You really take the time to come out here. We're at the Wednesday morning one. Tell me the lay of the land. Like what market should I pick? All the markets have got good stuff.
Well, I think the best stuff is whatever's best today, and at least that's the approach I take. I walk through the market, I taste everything, I look at everything, and I just buy what tastes good and excites me, and that's different every week, it's different every season. And I, again, taste it. If I like it, I bring it back to the restaurant, and then we start planning the menu. And the menu has some staple items. I always do a roasted chicken, but what the chicken is served with comes from here.
Mm-hmm.
So it changes not only seasonally, but depending on the time of the week and which market I'm buying from. But all of them, we have literally a market every day in Los Angeles, and every one of them is great.
So you mentioned a Monday one that's very underrated. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I don't understand. I've almost never seen another chef. This market on Wednesday is packed with chefs. Every restaurant comes here.
Yeah, we just ran into Michael Mina.
my favorite Monday market. It's not as big as this,
yeah,
but there's always something good there, and to me, it's the best, because Monday is the day when you've used up all your good stuff over the weekend,
mm-hmm.
And if you buy on Monday from, you know, one of your companies, it's left over from the week before. So where can you get great stuff on a Monday?
Monday. So is that the Hollywood one?
Yeah, that's in West Hollywood.
West Hollywood. And so where are we standing now? This is
Standing in front of Polito Farms, who grows citrus, one of my favorite farms. And right now we're in prime time for citrus, or at least kind of in the end of it. It's I wouldn't say the end of it. It's still in great time, but it's the most exciting fruit at the moment, for sure. They're growing theirs in San Diego, where the weather is even nicer than here. It's great for citrus.
That's where you're from, right?
Yeah, that's where I'm from. But I'm very excited about these Tom's tangerines right now. Super sweet, super delicious. We're making sorbet out of it. My wife is. We make salads out of it. We make, you name it. We were serving duck with it the other day. So much you can do with it. Cocktails. Super delicious.
Tell me about that one citrus that is a cross between a kumquat and a tangerine. Because I just had your cocktail at the bar.
Yeah, that's... Well, kumquats are great because it's the one citrus where the peel tastes better than the inside. And tangerines are so delicious and juicy in the inside. So it's kind of a cross between that. It has nice... juicy tangerine flavor, but you can eat the rind, which has all that floral citrus.
What's it called, this fruit?
It's called a mandarquat.
Mandarquat. It tastes prettier than the name sounds.
Yes.
What stand is that at?
I don't even know their name.
Somewhere over
right
there.
Right over there.
Somewhere at the Santa Monica Farmers Market. They look like, huh, how big are they? Like 2 inches?
Like a golf ball or so?
Like a golf ball, but like pear-ish shaped, like with a little bit of a navel, like a sticking up top part, right? Okay, so we're taking this home. These home, I'm probably gonna just snack on them, and just eat them all up. What would you be doing with them at home? Just something easy, and just kind of walk us through a recipe.
I just eat them.
I know,
but,
me too.
If I was cooking at home, it's great in a salad. Take the segments and mix it with some arugula, a little Meyer lemon from over there, some olive oil. It's delicious.
So there's good produce all year round in California.
In California, we have the seasons are longer. There's a lot of sun. There's a lot of great soil. So you get a lot of variety. And there's definitely seasons, but they're stretched out here. And there's tons of variety all year. And there's obviously better times. I mean, this is as good as this looks now in the middle of the summer. This is really incredible here.
It gets even better in the middle of the summer. So do you ever feel like in New York we've got wintertime, and then we like to justify the wintertime. We'd like to justify that wintertime gives us a spring to look forward to. What do chefs like tend to look forward to out here if you're having good stuff all year?
Well, I mean it's all relative to where you're at. And I go by taste, so I don't buy peas until they taste good, and when they taste good, I buy them. And in California, sometimes you have the best peas in the middle of the winter because they come back, and so really, if you just pay attention to what things taste like and what they look like, I mean, who cares what the season is?
When you're next in New York, we're going to get you in the studio at Roberta's, but before then, tell us about this like restaurant empire you have in Manila. It's so amazing.
Yeah, we opened... It was like everybody else struggles. It was a struggle to open Republic, and it took us years and a lot of stress and a lot of money and everything else that's difficult. And kind of in the middle of that, somehow I got into these other restaurants. Petty Cash also happened that way here, where it was a total accident. We just opened it, and it's now very successful and very good. But in the Philippines, I had no idea that we would ever do business there. I had no idea it would even be successful, but we opened up our first restaurant 2.5 years ago.
What's it called?
It's called Wildflower.
Mm-hmm. Spelled like F-L-O-U-R.
Yes, and there's a lot of bakery there. It's kind of got a French bistro accent to it, for sure.
It's like Republic, but in Manila.
In Manila, exactly. And it's been hugely successful. We have our fourth location under construction. We have the ice cream concept there that we just opened, called the Pharmacy. And we have two more on the way this year.
Tell me about the first couple of days of opening your very first Wildflower.
We opened Wildflower, was open in a location that everybody said would never work. It was a concept everybody said would never work.
Because it's a middle-class restaurant, so it's not one of those fancy restaurants in a hotel. It's not something that's like
Street food. Everything there is either in malls and very casual, or it's very high-end. And Wildflower is... It's not anything new here. It's a lot of what's going on. It has energy, and it's rustic and fun, and
casual,
but it's
fine
kind
dining.
Of in the middle. It's a middle class restaurant, and there's as they say, no middle class in the Philippines. So everybody thought it wouldn't work.
So first, nobody came.
3 days, we thought they were right because we opened up, we thought it was good, and literally everybody walked by it. Nobody came, and we started to get really nervous. On the fourth day, we were talking about it in the morning, and suddenly at noon, we were full because of one photograph from a food blogger who obviously had some influence, and we're packed ever since.
Those Asian bloggers. And it's got what?
Busier. It's been busier every day since.
And the newest one is your busiest one.
It's the busiest, yes.
Congratulations on your success in the Philippines and also on second baby on the way.
Any day now?
I have, I love Margarita's name. I think she has the coolest name because it's my favorite drink.
Mine too. That's what petty cash is all about. It's margaritas and tacos.
Oh, cool. So babies do literally right now.
In 4 weeks. Which could be right now.
Excellent. Well, I know you have to run back to the restaurant. Thank you so much for taking a moment.
You're welcome.
Bye, Walter.
Bye.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Leyte Su on Heritage Radio Network. If you love what you hear, do connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I'm at Leyte Su, that's LEITIHSU, at Heritage_radio, # WOMSHOW, WOMSHOW, short for Word of Mouth. And with that, I am so pleased to welcome people we like. Chef owner Amanda Cohen of Dirt Candy. Hey, Amanda.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time. With a 2-month-old restaurant, there's not a lot of that.
Not a lot of time.
tell me about... Okay, first of all, love your writing. Did you ever think that you were... I mean, do you have a background as a writer? You just are a great writer.
I'm not sure I'm a great writer. I don't really have a background, but, I speak English and I can write, so it sort of comes together.
Absolutely. Well, I want to quote some of my favorite quotables. In opening your article, in starting your article about the state of the restaurant industry and how you are actually optimistic about it, there are so many terrifying things in the world today. ISIS, Ebola, Mountain Dew flavored Doritos, and two more. As hard as I work on my dishes, within a few hours of being served, they are going to be flushed down the toilet, followed by about 12 cents in Charmin Ultra. And then finally, I'm discovering that getting it consistent for every diner is so complex it makes my brain bleed. About your newly larger Dirt Candy, what have you learned so far about doing a restaurant at a little bit bigger scale?
It's never easier the second time, no matter what people tell you.
Really?
It's just as hard. There's just a whole new set of problems. Yeah, I mean, it's a restaurant. There's lots of different personalities, lots of people working there, lots of new customers who are coming in. So it's figuring everything out on a day-to-day basis.
Do you find that the clientele is different the second time around in any ways?
Yeah, actually, I mean, we're getting a lot more people, so we're getting to know a lot more people.
Nice.
Which is great. We have lots of our regulars have come back, and lots of our regulars don't like the new space. I think they miss the tiny, intimate sort of shithole of Dirt Candy, little Dirt Candy that it was. And they're just not used to it being so big. And then we have new customers who have just discovered us, and they didn't know what we were and what our history was. And so for them, they just don't understand what all the buzz is about.
Mm-hmm. And I think the writing that you do is important because I do love it when chefs are able to make an impact outside of their little jewel box or shitholes of restaurants.
Don't get me wrong. I love Little Dirt Candy, but it was a little hole in the wall. I mean, it wasn't even comfortable.
And just a couple of days ago, Elizabeth Faulkner, our good friend and the last guest on Word of Mouth, she sees a big trend in chefs making an impact outside of the kitchen. How do you feel about that?
I think it's great. I think what happened was restaurants have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, but our sort of restaurant industry is very young and it's growing. And we're seeing a group of chefs who sort of want to change the industry they're working in. They don't like the status quo. You know, we've come from a system where young chefs aren't paid a lot of money. Dishwashers aren't paid a lot of money. We don't charge enough for food. We never cared where our food came from. And you do have sort of this new group of chefs who do want to make a difference, who are going to grow up in this industry and stay in this industry. And for them to do that, they have to really, I think, respect the industry.
Mm-hmm. Vegetables. You're really way ahead of the time, because there's been a rash of vegetable-driven cookbooks from major chefs. I mean, April Bloomfield's got one, for instance. Vegetables are in and they're here to stay, I think.
It's like, I hope so.
I mean,
I have 12 years on my lease, so I really hope vegetables are here to stay.
Well, I just want to share with you, I grew up as a little Asian kid in suburban California. The way that my mom cooked would be like way more veggies.
Right, right.
And, you know, when we went to like westernized restaurants, she'd be like, what? There's only like a little spot of veggies next to the big piece of meat.
Well, the vegetable in the center of the plate and sort of being the entire, meat. Protein being the center of the plate is really a Western idea, and not so much Asian or Latin American, South American, African, any other culture. It's really a very Westernized notion of food.
There are now restaurants, like there's this new Cider House that has a vegetarian
sale. Yep.
Yep, in Lower East Side. Okay, restaurants are vegetable driven. Is vegetarianism a dirty word?
No, it's just a different concept. It's a lifestyle, whereas people who are, you know, vegetarian, that tends to be how they eat every single day of their life, where mm-hmm. people who sometimes eat vegetable forward meals just happen to like vegetables. So it's very different, but it's not a dirty word at all.
Vegetable forward, by the way, is kind of a ridiculous word too. Can we just talk about that?
It's a very strange word, but I don't think anyone's come up with a better word for this sort of cuisine. You know, it's not French, it's not Italian, it's just vegetable. And then the natural derivative from that would be vegetarian, but again, it's not a good word that applies to this cuisine.
Yeah, maybe one day it'll just be
food
mainstream.
Yeah, hopefully
whatever.
One day it's just food.
It'll be just yummy. You traveled to do research in reopening the second Dirt Candy. Where'd you go?
Mostly I spent time in Mexico in the Yucatan at Cook It Raw. So I spent a couple of weeks there.
Nice.
It was fabulous. I didn't have to rush back to work. I got to learn about a whole new culture and spend time with other chefs, which more than anything was a great learning experience.
They do some really magical things with vegetables in Mexico, which sort of gets left behind in some of the typical American Mexican food, that with all the cheese and the gunky stuff.
It's true. It's a little bit harder to find vegetables where I was in the Yucatan. They mm-hmm. don't have a big vegetable cuisine, mm-hmm. But there are parts of Mexico that do amazing things with vegetables. This was just a little bit more pig heavy, I would say.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of pig.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Not as much vegetables. The markets at the time when we were there, really, there was some squash and tomatoes. And every once in a while, you would see some lettuce and be like, wow, that's exotic. A lot of pig.
So being the cutting edge vegetable whisperer, we started with, you know, your first restaurant and with Jeremy Fox at Ubuntu, and there's like vegetable action then, and now it's moving very quickly. What's next in the vegetable land of vegetables?
I think that it's just going to keep getting more and more mainstream. I really think one day I'm not going to be considered unique. Mm. I mean, hopefully I won't be considered sort of, you know, old and boring and passe. But I do think that this idea of this vegetable forward movement, it really is going to become part of the mainstream eating. And, you know, 5 years from now, we'll have moved on to something else. But we won't have gotten rid of vegetables. They're definitely here to stay.
When you write, do you get writer's block? Like, what's your...
Not so much. I mean, usually there's a topic that's either been given to me or it's been sort of stewing in my brain for a while. Sometimes I don't quite know how to say what I want to say, and that takes a while, but the topics are always there. There's a lot of topics.
Well, I think you talk about stuff that's hard, and you're, you know, quite... It's some of the most honest commentary about our industry, like, out there?
Yeah, well, we have an industry that is about smoke and mirrors, and it should be. You know, I'm an entertainer. Going to my restaurant should be entertainment, but it's also really important for people to know what goes into that entertainment, and I think it sort of right now we have a lot of showmanship and not as much honesty, and we need to find a balance. So for the moment, I like to be very honest about what goes on, and I'm very lucky I can do that. I own my own restaurant. I don't have investors who are going to come and get angry because I've been too honest about what's going on.
Nice.
Yeah, and I have I have some really good people who work for me who give me the time to write too. It does take time.
It's a small world. Do you find, are there any, you know, do you make enemies by being super straightforward?
I don't think within my world. I don't think within the chef world. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I've made lots of enemies with my customers. I try not to, just pick on one person. I'm picking more on the ideas of the industry.
Except that one Yelp review. That was hilarious.
Yeah, but even him,
you
sort
were so
thankful.
Nice to him.
You know,
you
he said, pointed out, he and I had a very big misunderstanding of what a walk-in is. But yeah, I mean, I don't think he was ever going to read Yelp again. But if he did, I hope he takes me up on my offer, Gerard.
Yes. Amanda wrote about this fellow named Gerard and go on and read this article in Eater, but then she elegantly ends it by inviting Gerard and his girlfriend into the restaurant for dinner on Amanda, which I think is so nice of you.
They're just issues, and I do think we need to talk about them. And the more we talk about them, the more we can get past them. And hopefully it really will make this a better industry. All I want is an industry that I'm proud of and one that my cooks want to stay in and that want to be a part of and also want to make better.
The ending part of this article, this made me laugh out loud. If my husband planned, first off, his girlfriend sounds amazing. If my husband planned a special night for my birthday and didn't start calling restaurants until that afternoon, and then took me to one where he thought he had to wait in line, I would stab him to death.
She's much nicer than I am. She was willing to go along with it.
Speaking of, who is your husband?
My husband is Grady Hendricks, and he is a writer. He writes books. He just had one published called Horror Store about IKEA.
Really?
Yep, and sort of ghosts in IKEA. Yeah, it's terrific. Everybody go buy it.
Sci-fi. All right.
Yeah. Ghost story, science fiction, yeah.
For some reason, I just feel like it sort of makes sense that you and your husband get along so well. Like, equally zany brains.
We have similar senses of humor, that's for sure.
How did you two meet?
We met in university many, many years ago.
Where'd you go to school?
NYU.
Oh, okay. So you're like a New York school kid.
I am. Definitely. I've been here for about 22 years.
And what did you study?
Cultural anthropology.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't use a lot of it these days, but it was a fun study.
Well, you wrote some papers. Okay.
I don't remember them, but I guess I did. I graduated. I know that somewhere I have a diploma.
Okay. So at what point were you like, I'm going to be a chef?
After college, we'd actually moved to Hong Kong for 2 years, just for fun, really. We had nothing else to do. And I fell in love with traveling, and I fell in love with the cuisine, and I sort of had this realization that what I wanted to do with my life was travel. But that I couldn't do that because I had no money. And so really the only way I could travel was to find a skill. And after Hong Kong, I moved to LA for a year, hated it, and ended up deciding that this is really what I wanted to do was travel. So I came back to New York and went to a school called the Natural Gourmet Institute, got my chef's degree, and with it decided that I was going to travel the world. And then I never traveled. I stayed in New York. But that is how I'd always liked cooking. I didn't know what I was going to do professionally.
You have some travel nightmares in your many travels. Tell us about one of them.
There's a lot. You must have read some of them. it's hard to tell. I was on a train once to Beijing from Hong Kong. It's about a 40-hour train ride.
40 hours?
Yeah, straight from Hong Kong. And I was supposed to go with one of my really good friends, and she broke her leg the day before. And I was like, fine, I guess I'll go by myself. and I ended up in a little cabin with two people who had been married for maybe a year or two, but hadn't seen each other for a year or two. So it was 40 hours of them fornicating.
Wow.
With me on the top bunk. But then...
Were they Chinese?
That's actually... Yeah. That's the best part of the story, because then I got to... then as we were sort of about 2 hours away from arriving in Beijing, I had gone to the bathroom, and bathrooms on the train in Beijing are just holes, you know, and it had been a long, long train ride, I guess, filled with lots of food for people. And my this was a long time ago, so there was no, like, cell phones or anything. All I had was my guidebook and wallet. And my guidebook fell out of the back of my pocket into the toilet.
Really?
And I had no choice but to pick up the guidebook. So then I picked it up, cleaned it off as best as I could, vomited a couple of times, got back into the cabin, listened to them have sex a couple more times, got off the train, went to go get in the taxi. And, I mean, I was the only sort of foreigner there at that hour. No taxi would pick me up. Finally, one did. And on the way to the hotel...
You probably smelled bad.
None of me smelled good. We picked up about seven other people and dropped them off along the way, too. And then I paid for everybody's rides until I finally got to my hotel. It was a really fun trip.
So the cab actually, like, did that without asking you for permission?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But it was good. It was, like, 22 years ago. I think the whole ride was, like, $1.50.
Okay.
So I got my money's worth. I met some nice people in the taxi.
Totally epic. When you met, I'm going to go back to college meeting your dude, because I just love these, like, little love stories. Like, were you guys in the same class, or, like, who eyed who first?
I don't know. It was 22 years ago. We were friends. We had a friend in common. So we just sort of stayed together.
Wow. Okay. How did he propose to you?
This is another very long, complicated story. we were in a play together, and he sort of wrote me notes throughout one of the rehearsals. And then, but we gotten married sort of as a joke 22 years ago.
Oh.
So we've been married for a long time.
So, like, he proposed to you through these little notes, and then you actually really got married, so you have a certificate, but then...
Yeah, but at the time, we weren't really dating. We were more like, oh, we're 19, wouldn't it be funny if we got married? Our parents will get really angry.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
gosh. Okay. Your cookbook, it's a graphic novel of sorts. Well, how did you come up with that? What was the aha moment? Such a fun cookbook.
You know, I really wanted to do something different. Most cookbooks are pretty similar.
Similar.
We felt like Dirt Candy was really different, and I wanted to do something that really represented it, how much fun we had there and sort of the chances we took, and how for us it was a real experiment every day, and a traditional cookbook just didn't seem like it would work for us. And so after a lot of debating, this is sort of what we came up with, and we were like, yeah, this could actually really work, and we can pack so much information into the story of it. You know, when we do these panels, you can say a million things and it's one panel versus writing out a whole long story.
Is there a chef you haven't gotten a chance to collaborate with, cook with, that you really are excited to?
That's a tough question. I think there's so many chefs that I haven't had a chance to. I think for the last 7-8 years, I've been in a little cocoon in my kitchen, and I very rarely get out of it. Mm-hmm. So pretty much every chef I'd like to collaborate with.
So if you were not a chef, what would be your dream job? A travel writer, okay.
I'd probably be a professional eater.
Professional eater.
Yeah, like one of those hot dog guys, you know?
Oh, really? Sounds like fun. You mean like really a professional?
Okay. Yeah, I like to eat. So if I'm not going to cook it, I might as well eat it.
So you're good at it. Like you're actually in a bottomless pit.
Not anymore. You know, once you turn 40, you're just actually not as hungry anymore. It's
you're
sad.
40?
I am.
You cannot be. Wow.
I'm 41.
I'm impressed. What do you do? Drink a lot of water?
No, I don't drink enough ever. Either water or alcohol. Both I'm ashamed about.
Wait, you don't drink enough water or alcohol?
Yeah.
Not alcohol either?
No. I wish I drank more. No, I just have good genes. My dad just turned 80, and he looks pretty good for 80.
Wow. Congrats, Dad.
Yeah.
Well, your mom and dad, what do they do for a living?
Well, they're both retired, really. Mm-hmm. My dad's 80.
Mm-hmm. Back then.
Back then, my dad was in business and a lawyer, and my mom ran a couple of foundations.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Foundations about causes that she particularly...
Yeah, mostly centered around helping kids.
Okay. Where did you grow up?
Toronto.
Oh, yay. Hey.
A good Canadian girl.
Nice. And when did you come over here?
22 years ago. So, okay. I don't know, 1993, 94.
For college, then.
Yeah, exactly.
After a very quick commercial break, we will return with Chef Amanda. We have some questions coming in from Instagram. And stay close.
International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Word of Mouth with Leyte Sue on Heritage Radio Network. And we are live in studio with chef owner Amanda Cohen of Dirt Candy. Hello.
Hey.
Welcome
Hi, everybody.
Back. Yay. All right. So loving all of your very straightforward writing. You talk a lot about women, the role women in restaurants, women chefs, and there's something that I struggle with. That I wanted to get your opinion on, which is that a lot of all this womenish stuff is, you know, a lot of it is it relies on like women ourselves to put ourselves out there more.
Sure, absolutely.
Or is that just me being a woman and blaming myself?
No, I mean, if you want press, you have to get out there. If you want attention, it's a second job. You know, you have to do it. It's like me and writing. It's a second job, but I think it's important. So I do it, and I do it partially to, you know, put myself out there to get more press, to have, you know, people recognize me. So, yeah, if this is something you want, you have to work twice as hard for it, unfortunately. It's not going to come to you.
Yeah, the CIA is doing this, like, starting a business, a food business school, or like a much more of a business school curriculum.
Right.
I'm going to this thing tomorrow night, and I just think it's really rad. A lot of I think the young chefs that are going to culinary school now and paying big bucks to be successful, part of it's got to include like all this stuff around networking and personal branding and social media. In fact,
yeah, I mean, welcome. I wish I could go back to school to learn how to deal with like Yelp and Twitter and reviews and all that. They weren't around when I started out as a chef. The internet basically wasn't around when I started out. So you need these tools. It's part of your job, and it might be unfortunate, it might not be what you want it to be, but this is the reality for right now.
Our friend Elizabeth Faulkner, who I really admire, yesterday at the Best New Chefs Food and Wine party, I learned something from her that I kind of knew, like sort of, but then now I'm making it a point to always do this. But when I walked in with her after the ran into each other, the coach, like, yo, she's like, let's go to the step and repeat. Like, she made a beeline, you know, and she was like, you have to be your own PR. And I just thought that was so cool that she just, you know.
She gets it. She works a room. She's one of those people, you hear about her, you know about her, and you know all this about her because she's treated this like what it is, which is a second job. It's not going to come to you for free. You can't just sit back and think, oh, I have enough skill and people will recognize me. It's certainly not going to happen to a woman chef.
I think it has something to do with the fact that when we grow up as little girls, we're told in fairy tale books, like in Cinderella, that the perfect Prince Charming is going to like swoop in and save us from like untimely death. It's kind of like that. Like, I feel like there's that thing going on.
Yeah, there's no Prince Charming in this world. Not going to swoop in and save you at a party and introduce you to everybody. It's really awkward and it's hard when years and years ago when I decided I wanted to sort of put together a group of women chefs to have dinner together, I walked into a room and I knew no one. The world I came from, the vegetarian cooking world, is really small, really insular, and nobody sort of knows you in it. And it was at Share, which is an event for women's breast cancer and ovarian cancer, and all the women chefs participate in every year, and I managed to talk my way into it, and I just walked up to every single woman chef there, and I was like, hi, I'm Amanda Cohen, I own a restaurant called Dirt Candy, and some of them were like, who are you? And other people were like, oh, I've tried to get in, da-da-da. And I was like, you know, I'd really love for you to participate in this, and they were like, yeah, this is great. And I walked out of this night a little tipsy, because I'd had a lot of drinks to be able to do that, but thinking, oh, why was I so scared? Everybody, you know, wants to know each other, and nobody's talking to each other, and why don't we just all do this more?
So my tip that I always give folks, like, is, like, show up and don't, you know, if you see someone standing next to the shrimp bowl, go up to the shrimp bowl, too, and then just say something to them, because everyone's awkwardly arriving early.
Absolutely.
And feeling weird and wants to make friends.
It's all like a prom dance when you're 15, you know? Everybody's a wallflower, just some people hide it better.
Yeah, and the people who aren't cool with you approaching them, that's sort of like their own fault for being crappy because, you know, who knows? It could be Amanda Cohen approaching you, and you just didn't give her the time of day, you know?
Exactly. I don't know what that means, but yeah.
So we usually pick one question from Instagram, but you are getting a massive number of really great questions. And I think part of the reason why is because you put yourself out there, so people want to talk to you and ask you questions. But before we do that, I'm going to let it go on for a couple more minutes, this question getting. Tips that you like to give young chefs / women, you know, one big one that you would want, like, a culinary student today to know.
The biggest tip I can give to anybody is put your head down and work hard in whatever kitchen you find yourself in. You know, it's going to be hard. This isn't an easy job. Find a job that you're comfortable in. Stay there for a year. Don't try to get out of it in 3 months and think there's something better. Stay throughout all four seasons. Hopefully you'll move up. You'll know all the stations. And just put your head down and work hard. That is the only way that you are going to learn.
Amazing. Did you ever get this, like, I had this recent realization lately. Now this is kind of an aside, that, like, you don't have perspective on yourself until later. So you at some point you realize, like, oh, I'm kind of a hard worker. Or, you know, have you ever had those?
Well,
weird,
hindsight's
like,
everything, right? It's 2020. I mean, it is. You don't realize what it is you've done until you're many years past it.
Very cool. All right. So some questions, from Instagram. All right. So shout out to Aaron Fairbanks. We were talking just before the show. We love language. We love words. And is vegetarian a bad word? So that question was from Aaron_Fairbanks, our executive director, Heritage Radio Network.
Hey,
Aaron. Lerv. Susan_Ho. What's the sexiest vegetable we don't really know about that much about yet?
I have to tell you, I really like onions. So I think we know a lot about onions, but there's just something about an onion. There's layers, and you peel it, and there's so much you can do with it. And there's something about a vegetable that can make you cry. You know, it's like water for chocolate. This vegetable is, it's like angry. It's going to like bring out all these emotions in you. That's hot.
That is, God, you are good at these. You're good at these answers. Because there's that one article, Q&A with you. You're just good at like the answers to those like really annoying interview questions. In fact, I have one for you. What is your favorite kitchen tool?
My dishwasher or my sous chef. They're the ones who work the hardest.
Okay, fake Josh Stein says, is there any relation between the rise in veggie forward cooking, haha, veggie forward, and the still too slow but happily growing phenomenon of women chefs? It's interesting.
I'm not sure. That's actually a really good question. Mm-hmm. I don't have a snappy comeback for it. So. No, because I don't find that women chefs are taking the lead in vegetable forward cooking. I think what you're now finding is an industry that is really looking for the next hot new thing. And right now that's vegetables. And I also think it might be women chefs. So those two are coming together, but they're not relying on each other.
Tech Bytes HRN has an idea for you. Any plans to turn the cookbook into animation would be cool.
Oh, I'd love that. Can you imagine if I was a Saturday morning cartoon?
That is, yeah. All right, okay, so now that you've put that out in the world.
If anybody wants to do that with us, call me.
It has more likelihood of manifesting. We like that. We like manifesting awesomeness. Heidi eats a lot. Was this winter particularly challenging for your menu? What ways do you get more creative during winter months?
Well, fortunately, we were closed for most of the winter. We didn't open until February, mm-hmm. and we closed Little Dirt Candy in September. But, you know, winter's kind of like summer and spring. We sort of box ourselves in anyways. We have a limited menu, and we only, each dish focuses on one vegetable. So once we figure out what the vegetable is that we want to play with, then we get to have fun with it. So not so hard. I think the only thing that is will be hard for everybody is that spring's going to start a little bit later. So we're not going to see all that great spring produce for a couple more weeks or even months. And that's what's going to make it hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I Bike for Food asks, what's your opinion on faux meat?
I think it has a place in the time, and done well, it is delicious. There are whole cuisines based around it, like Buddhist cuisines.
I love that stuff.
Temple cooking cuisine has some, and Zen cooking. It's amazing. I don't necessarily think it's a replacement for meat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes the vegetarian world has relied a little bit too much on it. But really, when you have it and it's done well, it can blow your mind.
Oh, yeah. I love Chinese vegetarian food. It is bonkers delicious. So, last question I'm going to pull from here before we wind it down. Jenna Zim picks Brussels sprouts, then carrots, not to mention kale. I'm going to throw that in. What's the new It's Veggie?
I don't know. I kind of think it's been cauliflower. That's what it was.
Yeah.
What it's going to be. I don't know. We have a radish dish coming on the menu, so I'm really hoping it's radishes. That's what I want it to be. It's going to be radishes. I'm calling it here and now. Spring 2015.
Nice. We have a trendsetter here in the studio. Lucky us. So with the last 5 minutes left in the show, we're going to wind it down with Amanda Cohen.
Wind down.
With Amanda Cohen, Chef Amanda Cohen, Dirt Candy, who also does the buying of the wines for her restaurants. So, Amanda, tell us about your wine list. Like, what are you pairing with veggies?
Well, we have a pretty unique wine list, actually. We tend to focus on unknown or forgotten varietals,
mm-hmm.
and half of our wine list is actually natural wines.
Mm.
So, unfiltered, no additives. Sort of a more natural process of making the wine. And that's what sort of really gets us all excited in the mm-hmm. restaurant right now. I find it kind of boring to go out and have like the same wine that everybody else is having, a Merlot or a Chardonnay that you know exactly how it's going to taste. I want people to come in and sort of discover really new, exciting wines and grapes that they've never had before and sort of celebrate the diversity that there are and that there is in winemaking. Right now, you in wine lists all over the city, you see the same grapes, mm-hmm. the same wines, mm-hmm. the same winemakers.
So what is a pairing on the menu right now you're really jazzed about?
Well, we have a couple of sort of really amazing natural wines. One of my favorite winemakers is a gentleman called Stefan Tissot.
Mm-hmm.
He makes like 26 different wines, all in small batches, and he has a Chardonnay that is unlike any Chardonnay you've ever had. It's not creamy, it's not oaky, it's just sort of just this deep, natural Chardonnay grape flavor. Mm-hmm. It's funky. It has this fermented flavor to it, and it pairs well with a lot of our dishes, actually almost across the board, because it has that fermented flavor, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of pickles. And actually, with the pickles that are in our dishes and this fermented flavor, they just really bring each other out, and they like fight with each other in your mouth, and then they sort of relax together. And then by the end of the dish and the wine, you feel like, oh, I've been through a battle and I've won, and it's amazing.
What are you looking forward to drinking with the change of the seasons that's happening slowly?
Very slowly. It's hard not to get excited about rosés. So we're almost at rosé season. And when you find the right rosé that's not too sweet, doesn't have too much fruit, and still is like pretty dry, you're just like, yeah, spring is here. I'm going to sit out on my balcony with my glass of rosé and, you know, celebrate the flowers.
It's so, by the way, such a pleasure to talk about wine with a chef, because sometimes between food people and the beverage side, there's not as much conversation as I, you know, it's been surprising to me.
Right.
My last question for you is what is it about wine today that you think people aren't talking about that they should be talking about more?
Well, to go back, I think it's natural wines. I think we have this whole industry that's really exciting, that's young. The winemakers are young. They're trying new things. And there's just so much to discover in so many winemakers. For me, going out to eat and going out to drink, it's all about going on an adventure. And you should really, you don't have to love everything you taste, mm-hmm. but you should learn something. You should discover something. And that's what you get to do with natural wines every time. It's like, wow. I've never had this before. I hate this. I love this. Can I get it again? Oh, shit. They've only made one bottle of it.
Thank you so much, Amanda. The aboot is coming out. I now see it. It was really lovely to get to catch up with you today.
It was great. Thank you so much.
That was just our Wine It Down with our live in-studio guest, Amanda Cohen, of the newly reopened and expanded Dirt Candy 2.0. At the top of the show, we caught up with Walter Mansky, chef owner of Republique, and Petty Cash at the Santa Monica Farmers Market in L.A. on Wednesday morning. And we're live 2 p.m. Eastern Wednesdays, word of mouth on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Leyte Su. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, eat well, be swell.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.